This is the Real Talk University podcast, where your hosts, Andre and Christian, explore success stories outside of the classroom.
What is up? What is up, Real Talk University fam? Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Real Talk University podcast. If this is your first time tuning into our podcast, we just want to welcome you and thank you for deciding to tune into today's episode. And we really hope that we can provide value to you guys, because again, this is why we do the podcast, is to bring value to young entrepreneurs like Christian and I, who are looking to really level up outside of the classroom and self-educate and just invest in themselves in general with education like this. And we had the pleasure of interviewing a special guest today who goes by the name of Anthony Trucks, who you might recognize him from being an NFL athlete for the Steelers or the Buccaneers or the Redskins or being on American Ninja Warrior. And just a few more achievements to his name is being a seven-figure gym owner, a six-figure consultant, international keynote speaker, and a best-selling author. It was just a crazy interview because his story is just mesmerizing. The way he started out being sold into foster care, there's just really, if you looked at this guy from the time he was a kid, there was no hope for him to succeed, and he really just took control. He basically just showed to us that there's no excuses in life to not go out and get what you want out of life, because really anyone is capable. You just have to have the mindset and have to understand that the opportunities are out there. And that ties back into why we started this podcast, is to show people like Christian and I, young entrepreneurs, people that are motivated, looking for inspiration like this, can see what's possible outside of just, you know, the 9-to-5 or the traditional college classroom. So we really hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if this is your first time tuning in, be sure to tell your friends about it. If you get anything out of this podcast, we do this for free. We've been doing it for free for the last half a year. And all we ask is just for you to share this with a friend, share it with family, really anyone that you think could benefit from it, if you do, which is really the whole point of this. So again, thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you enjoy the episode. And yeah, let's go. How's it going, Real Talk fam? I just wanted to jump in here real quick before we start this new episode of Real Talk University with an offer that Christian and I have put together for you guys. Basically, as a thank you for listening and tuning into all of our episodes and supporting us along the way so far. So what we put together is the Podcast Blueprint ebook, which you'll have access to for free. Absolutely free. This is a downloadable PDF containing all the information, actionable steps, tips, resources, everything you need to launch your very own successful podcast in 30 days or less, exactly how Christian and I have done so. After reading our ebook, you'll be able to launch your own podcast today, book your dream guest for your interviews, and get ads and sponsors immediately. To claim your free copy today, visit the link at bit.ly/RTU ebook. That's bit.ly/RTU ebook. EBOOK. Get your free copy today before this offer expires.
All right, man. Sounds good. And we'll just, let it rip and run. If nothing's off limits, just so you know, I just talk a lot. So whatever, my goal for this is just to make sure that whatever your audience needs to hear, I can serve them. So just direct me with questions you think would be relevant to them that they want to listen to, and then we'll go from there, man.
Amazing. And we just want to thank you for taking the time. I'm sure you're super busy doing ton of other amazing things, so we really appreciate you taking the time.
No problem, man. I got a whole bunch of crazy. My day is packed, but I make sure to make time for people who are trying to do cool stuff like you guys.
Appreciate it. So I'm Andre, and this is Christian. We're the host of Real Talk University. Yes. So we started about 6 months ago. It's just a podcast towards college students. So we're both freshmen in college. And basically the reason we started it is when we were in college, we realized, you know, in our first semester that everyone was kind of competing to try to do the same thing, you know, get good grades, try to set themselves up for a good internship, a good job. But Christian and I both, you know, saw the same vision, which was that there's so much more to do outside of the classroom, especially nowadays with social media, finding your passion, so many other things.
And we decided to start a podcast where we basically connect our audience with people like you. We will allow you guys to share your story and how you've done that. So that's what we're going to gear the interview towards. And then I'm going to let Christian start off with the first questions.
Perfect.
Yeah, so we're just going to start out with a little game, two truths and a lie. I'm sure you've heard of it. So if you could just give us three statements and have two of them be true, and we'll pick out the
hopefully. All right, two true statements. Let's see. Two truths and a lie. I'll just go with it. So two truths. We'll say I divorced and remarried my ex-wife. I shot someone in the leg, and I have been I'm going to make something up. No, I'm not. I'm just kidding. Am I? I have gone, what's that? Parasailing. Gone parasailing.
Interesting. I don't think you shot someone in the leg.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to say the same thing.
You'd be wrong.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That was. It was okay. It was not like anything bad. It was actually something that I was in the right for. But yeah, shot someone in the leg, man. It's not that the guy shouldn't have got shot in the leg. I'm being honest.
Wow. Yeah, well, we appreciate the honesty. I mean, I feel like the interview goes a lot better if we're just transparent and we all give our honest stories. So
yeah, that's a perfect one for two truths and a lie, bro.
Love it. All right. So could you just tell us who you are, what you're about, and what you're currently up to for our audience?
Yeah, man. So my name is Anthony Trucks. I'm a former NFL athlete. Went to college, University of Oregon. I'm a current American Ninja Warrior on the NBC's TV show. And mostly I'm a speaker, author, and a coach. And primarily in my heart, I'm a father and a husband. Like, that's my world. What I'm up to in the world is I help people navigate shift. So the biggest thing we deal with in life is we're always dealing with things that happen either by force or by choice. We lose someone, we get a cool job, something amazing happens. And within life, these transitions take place and we usually don't know how to navigate them well. And so for me, what I do is I step in and teach people how to navigate these shifts. And realistically, what it is, it's like an identity crisis we're running into. It's like, I'm in this new stage, this new place. Who am I here? How do I navigate this? I don't have the tools for this. And I help equip people with the tools to navigate those shifts in their life, which really is navigating the shifts in their identity. And what I do in the world, man, is just a blast. I get to have fun and hang out and talk to cool people like yourself. And I love getting up and being able to impact people in a way that most don't think is possible. And I know a lot of people are like, I want to help people, right? That's the biggest thing is I want to create something cool to help people. Everybody wants to help people. But I've been blessed to find something that ties to me as an individual from when I grew up, and all my crazy stuff we'll go into in a second, I guess. And what I actually can provide back to the world from my experiences, from my insight, from my studies.
Right. So I actually read up on like kind of the shifts that you experienced in your life, but obviously our audience isn't familiar. So could you just take us through some of the major shifts that you've experienced?
Yeah. Yeah, man. So my first memory of life was, I was being given away into foster care at 3 years old by my mom. So I had three siblings, and at 3 years old, she's like, I can't take care of you guys and put us into the system. The foster care system at the time was not a very good system. So a lot of bad stuff happened to a lot of good little kids. And I was one of those kids that a lot of bad stuff happened to. So for a lot of years, I bounced around from house to house, beating, starvation, torture, weird stuff. At 6 years old, I got put into a house that's my home now, my family now. The unique difference is I'm the only black person in that all white family. So I kind of look a little bit different. but for me, like having the shift of being this you know, kid, then a foster kid, to then being this only kid in an all white family, then from there progressing on to finally being adopted at 14, I got to play football. Like, I became this football athlete. So that's another transition of who I am. Met my high school sweetheart. My adoptive mom got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and I'm the kid of a sick mom. Like, yeah, these weird things, and I get a college scholarship. I sucked at first at football. I was horrible. And then I kept working at this thing and found a way to get better at it. Eventually got a scholarship. In college, I had my first son. How old are you guys now?
We're 19.
Yep. So imagine being pregnant. Your girlfriend's pregnant with a kid right now. That was my life.
I don't really have much money for myself. So
So at 19, your age, I got my girlfriend, my fiance at the time, my high school sweetheart, was pregnant, had a kid at 20, full-time college athletes, full-time college student. She's a full-time college student. And we figured it out, bro. Like, we got it done. My wife graduated with her master's summa cum laude, like 4.1 GPA within like 4.5 years. I graduated. I got a chance to play in the NFL. Got married right before we went into the NFL. Played in the NFL for about 2.5 years. Got hurt in my third year playing with the Steelers against the Philadelphia Eagles. Went home, opened a gym. My degree is in kinesiology. So opened a gym and I started training people and lost my marriage, lost my health, lost my identity from football because it was now gone. Like, had a lot of things I dealt with. but then kind of came full circle and figured it all out. And a whole lot of weird stuff transitioned from in the game, out of game. My business wasn't doing well. My marriage fell apart. And then I figured it all out. So now I'm back with my ex-wife. I have since blossomed to where I've been able to sell the gym. I now travel the world and speak. And what I speak about is what the first like 30-something years of my life really was, which was dealing with life when it just throws curveballs at you all day, every day, in ways that you really don't want, but you have to deal with. Good and bad sometimes. I mean, playing in the NFL was a curveball, right? I've never been in that position before. I've never known, like, how do you deal with this? And so my weird skill set was I never had this point of like, I'm going to back down, I'm going to run away. It was always like, how do I figure this out? And then the little parts of my psyche and my identity started building up to become the guy that just deals with random stuff. Like, I don't think that we in life have problems where we're not prepared. It's that some of us don't know how to stretch. Like, we're always going to be unprepared for that next level we want to get to. But if you keep in mind that you're supposed to be unprepared because you haven't been there, it's okay. And if you understand that all you have to do is learn how to stretch, which means when something new happens, to be able to navigate these pitfalls without quitting, you find you get some really cool tools along the way to where now you could literally throw damn near anything at me, good or bad, and I'll find a way to figure it out pretty well. That's what I teach people.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's definitely huge, especially for like entrepreneurs and business owners who don't really know where their next paycheck is coming from or how they're going to level up. So
yep.
That's right. Yep. But I just want to go back. Yeah. I just want to go back to the beginning. I mean, you said you were bad at football and then you got a scholarship and you played at the University of Oregon, like the Ducks, right?
Yeah, I was horrible.
Yeah, you kind of downplayed that. Like, you're like, oh, yeah, I got a scholarship. Like, you got a major D1 scholarship. Like, take us through how you transform from a bad player to a high D1 athlete.
Well, I think this is the common thing for anybody. We all get to these points where, like, you typically have this dream you want, right? This thing you want to have completed and executed and done, but you're not going to be good at it at first. A lot of people, they start these things and they hope that at the very beginning I'm going to be great. And if I'm not great, I'm just going to stop. It's the whole Carol Dweck mindset concept, right? And what ends up happening is you try this thing out and you suck. And then you're like, I don't want to do this anymore because I don't want to feel the pain of what it feels like to suck at this thing that I love. So for me, what I did is I played football for a couple of years. I was horrible and I just chalked it up. I was like, my mom is sick. I'm a former foster kid. I'm not supposed to do well in life. And I literally just gave the game up. I would sleep in class. I wouldn't pay attention to anything. It was the only thing keeping me like academically sound. And I grew up, we were actually really poor. Like, we didn't have much of anything. Like, I had holes in my shoes. I had, like, we borrowed clothes from each other. Like, we were poor. And my mom told me, like, the only way you're going to go to college is if you get a scholarship because I can't afford it, even community college. So I had to figure a way around this whole situation. And so what I remember doing was sitting in class one day and I chalked it all up and I'm sitting next to this girl and her friend and they're talking to each other. They didn't know I'm listening to them. And I had this park over my head. I looked like I was sleeping. And one girl says to the other girl, well, the reason I'm so bad is because I'm in foster care. And as simple as the statement was, it was the first time I heard somebody say out loud my excuse. And whenever you have someone say your excuse out loud, you sometimes get an opportunity to hear how incredibly stupid it sounds. And I was like, this is dumb. Like, my entire life, the entire rest of my life is going to be depicted by something that I had no control over that took place in the very beginning of my life. And I was like, this just sounds dumb. I don't want to be that guy at 30 years old who's a bad dad, bad husband, criminal because of something that happened when I was 3, 4, 5, 6, right? So I just had this thought of, what do I got to do to be great? Like, not the version of like, oh, if he just does this as a former foster kid, that'd be great. But like, what's the world's version of great? And it was like, you got to succeed at something great. Like, you got to go out and just go to work. And so I started this process of trying to put the effort into something before I knew I'd be successful. And what I put the effort into is football. I figured if I can go and work in the weight room and get my muscles bigger, I could be stronger, I could be better. If I go and run routes, I'd be better at running routes. If I caught a bunch of footballs, I'd never have another football. Like, if I put the time in, I could be better, but I got to put the time in, right? So I started doing that. And little by little, when you start investing time into something, you get to this point of having what's called investment bias. And investment bias is, I've put way too much time in for me not to get a return. Like, so for me, when I showed up to football the next year, like, you didn't have the right to beat me. Like, you didn't put the time in. Like, I put the time in. I put the hours in. I put the work in. I put the sweat in. You didn't have the right to beat me. Like, are you serious? So we get back up, and I'd go until I got to this dominant mindset that was simply just because I decided to put work in. And the dominant mindset was, I'm going to find a way to win. When you have that grit, it just pans out. And so I showed up to practice, a different athlete. I showed up to games, a different athlete. I performed, I had a chip in my shoulder. And I went from literally being like a sucky athlete, like so-so, couldn't catch a football, couldn't block, to being a monster. And I got moved up the very next year from my sophomore year to varsity. And then 3 years later, I got a scholarship to Oregon. I had a bunch of offers from like Nebraska, Michigan, USC, you name it. I just chose Oregon at the time. They were number two in the country. And that was how it worked, man. It was just a matter of me stepping into a space where internally I did not have the confidence to do anything, but I realized if I was going to get the confidence, it was going to come from doing the work.
Yeah.
Dude, that's crazy. Cause like so many people talk about it, like, especially nowadays, there's so many like shortcuts to doing things. Like there's so many like, you know, get rich quick schemes and all that kind of stuff. And they may work, but I feel like when you put in that work and like when you really like give it your all, like you believe like in your mind that you deserve it. And like, I feel like when that like is cemented into your mindset, like it just opens up so many more possibilities. And like you said, like there's like such a strong will and nothing else can defeat that.
Yep. It's an identity thing. It's when you believe that to be you, you protect you with your actions. So our identity is who we see ourselves to be. We may not even know exactly what that means, but I'm sure there's things about you guys that you may have done. Think about anything you've mastered in your life or you've done for a long period of time. When somebody challenges that in you, it's like, no. That's not, no. Like if you're a baker, I've been baking for 20 years, bro. I don't care. No. You can't talk to me about baking, right? So it becomes our identity. And what we do is whenever we have an identity that's locked in a place, we protect that with our actions, which is really our ego. Ego says, no, I'm not going to allow you to challenge me. Look what I can do. And here are the actions of what I do. And if I want to be a specific person and continue to be great in that identity and protect it, I'll do actions against the good feelings to keep myself in that place. So for example, if it's like, I'm the person that has an immaculately clean bedroom, right? My identity is that. People know me as that. And I got a buddy who, kid you not, when I grew up in high school, his name was Christian. This dude was like neat freak. His room had to be perfect. If we ever moved it like that, I'm talking if you moved a bobblehead, he flipped a lid. That was his identity. I'm the guy with the clean room. So what happens is in that, your actions will always do the things, even if they suck in the moment, to make sure you maintain that identity. So if we moved his blankets or he moved something, he would drive out of his way to go home to get it done, to fix it, to go back, because it meant that he could maintain his identity. His actions were protected because his ego wouldn't let him be the guy that didn't have a clean room. You can apply it literally anywhere to anybody's part of life. But when you get to that stage, when it's who you identify as, we don't want to be incongruent. So we will do damn near anything under the sun to maintain that identity. So if you're like, I want to be the best student, you'll do your homework. You'll study. You'll go to class, period. You want to be a good athlete, you'll work out. You're doing routes. Like you'll go to practice. You'll show up. You'll read the playbook. You'll do whatever needs to be done. And it won't be that place where most people are like drawn and dragged to do it. Like, Mom, I don't want to do the dishes. Like that emotional draining feeling. In fact, it's the opposite. It becomes effortless effort. You just do it. And then people look at you like, man, you're amazing. You'll be like, what? It's just what I do. It's just who I am. Because that level is just who you are now. And it becomes this effortless effort level and life rolls smooth.
Right. So what was it like to reach the NFL where every single person you're competing against has that same mindset? Like every single guy out there is like, I'm the best. I've worked all my life. Yeah. At this. Like,
it's different, bro. Yeah. That's a whole different world because of the alpha mentality behind it. Because you're taking something that means everybody. Like, physical stuff is the only thing that's super close to anybody's like really dialed in emotion and identity. Like you don't get more intimate than a person's body, right? So whenever I go out and I challenge you physically as a man, that's a whole different space, right? So being in that realm, you have to have this bravado, this exterior that is just rugged, rigid, tough, and there's no room for half-stepping, man. Like, you can't go out there with a little bit of fear because they'll smell it. So being in that space, it's kind of like you have to pull every ounce of your being out every single day, every practice, even in the locker room, like the banter back and forth, it's a nonstop thing. So when you're in that environment, you get conditioned. Like, I am creepy conditioned to deal with hardship just from like being in the locker room, right? Not even from playing on the field, but just from being in that environment, you're conditioned to deal with hardship.
Yep. And then I just want to, like, as a fan, like, I wear this hoodie all the time. I didn't just wear it because I knew you were on the Steelers. Like, I'm a
sure. No.
So, like, could you just take us through, like, what years you were on the team, like, who you had the best interactions with, like, what the team was like and all that kind of stuff? Because I'm sure you played around the time when, like, Big Ben and Jerome Bettis just won
Super Bowl. Yeah, well, I was there a little bit after Bettis. I was there for 1 year. So, a little bit after Bettis, maybe a year, maybe the next year after when Mike Tomlin came on. I was with like Hines Ward, Jerome Bettis was there. No, it's Roethlisberger was there. Who else was there when I was there? I'm trying to think of guys who were there as the running backs. There's a lot of guys there. I can't even remember all their names. I played in
was it like Was it like Willie Parker?
Willie Parker was there. Fast Willie Parker was there. Yes, he was. They're all there. Najee? I can't remember. There's a fullback that was there too. He had a shoe store that was in downtown Pennsylvania, downtown Pittsburgh. But I was there with a bunch of good guys, man. It was the cool thing about the team is it's a very blue collar team. Like, yeah, I was there with Dick LeBeau when he was still the D coordinator, and he was like your grandpa. Like when you're with different places, like you don't want to let people down because you don't want to make mistakes. But for him, it was like you didn't want to let your grandpa down. Like it was a good feeling team. I was there in 08 when everybody won a Super Bowl. I say everybody else because I got hurt in the first preseason game. All my teammates went on to win a Super Bowl, and I had to sit home and watch it take place. But no, man, it was a great environment, great team, and they do a good job of getting good people on the ship.
Absolutely. I feel like the culture recently has kind of shifted away with, like, the likes of number 84. I don't want to say his name, but
yeah,
you were there during a really great time, and, like, that's just to be able to witness that. So
it's fun, man. No complaints on my end.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So I just want to, like, rewind a little bit. You got, like, deep into identity, which I thought was awesome. You provided a lot of great, like, nuggets about it. So for people that, you know, understand what you're talking about, there's people out there, I think a majority of them see that, but they struggle to find or identify their own identity. So, like, yeah. I know your life mission is kind of around helping people to do that. So if you could just go through your process of doing that.
Yeah. So one of the first things we do is we go through what's called the identity phase grid. So it's a grid. Imagine four corners. And if you're looking at like a window with four little panes, right? The top left corner is going to be what's called lost. And what happens is the top left corner starts. And if you go from the top left down, it's going to be closed. Closed, but it's going to be, closed. Are you closed into your identity? Are you locked into your identity? Across the top from left to right is going to be, are you searching? Now, this grid is comprised of whether or not you have locked into your identity or whether or not you are searching for your identity. What happens if you are not searching for your identity, you're just kind of floating, and you have not locked into an identity, you're lost. And lost simply means that you are floating. This is where people get to the level of like suicide or completely just pulled back from society because they don't know who they are. They don't know what to do. They're completely lost. It's a scary place. And we start feeling like everything's worthless, shouldn't do anything. The next level is someone who hasn't searched for their identity, hasn't done any kind of research or even tried things in life, but they locked into something way too early. And this is a person who's like, well, all my family, they're all butchers. Or my mom said I have to be a nurse, right? I didn't get a chance to go look for what I wanted to do, but I locked into this identity and now I'm just doing this work and I hate it. Like, I don't like my major. I don't like my job, whatever it is. But I feel like because I've been doing it for so long, I have to keep on doing it. It's an investment bias. And so people do the same thing for years, hating it. And for me, it's disgusting. It's like, you're going to waste your life doing something you don't want to do just because you've been doing something you don't want to do. Right? It's this weird thought. So that's like that area where people are to just close off and it sucks. Then you have the person, which is a great space to be, who has not locked into their identity, but they're still searching. They're open. That's what I call it. It's going to be a top right corner. So they're now open. And open's a great space because open says, I am going and living the world. This is someone who's like, you know, I'm going to go like you guys, I'm going to college. I'm going to see what I can do. I'm going to meet some people. I'll find my job. I'm open to it all. It's a great place to be. A lot of people actually aren't there for some reason. The next level is the bottom right, which is where we all want to be, is that found. Look, I've spent time searching. I've spent time trying things. I've gone into different areas and I'm locked in now. I've found myself, right? And that finding yourself is a great space. Women talk about it like, I got to find myself, right? And when you're found, it's like everything aligns. Like you're in a good groove. Like you have a feeling of this is the work that I'm doing has meaning to it, has purpose. It's in the right direction of where I want to be. And like for me, like I'm found. I'm a speaker, author, coach, dad, husband. Like that's what I do. I found my groove, right? But to be honest, some people get to a spot in life where they have great success and they found themselves and then they get unhappy. And a lot of people are like, dude, how could you be happy if you've already found your stuff? And this is like me, I was found in the gym. I had my gym. I was doing my thing. I was speaking, traveling in a 10,000 square foot facility, 19 employees. I found my groove. And then all of a sudden I was like, I don't love this anymore. And what a lot of people don't realize, it's like the people who are stars, who are famous, that go like to drugs and go crazy, is because they get locked into this found space and they slide back to lost. They don't know what to do. There's no more excitement. They're not challenged. Well, what they should do is say, look, I'm going to open myself back up. They shift back to open. And in open, they can say, okay, cool. I had these great accomplishments. What else can I do? I'm not just the actor. I'm not just a football player. I'm not just the coach. what else can Anthony do, right? And it's scary because in doing so, you feel like you're forgetting or losing or throwing away all the stuff you've already earned or accomplished or done, when the reality is you just bring the insights with you to that new stage. And so what you do is you shift back down to open if you're in that found stage and you find out what you want to do, then you can be found again, right? So it's a constant ebb and flow of life. And so people who are running through life trying to figure out, like, who am I? It starts with understanding where you fit in that grid first, being really honest. Like, are you a person that's been just closed off? Did you lock in too early? Cool. Open up, try new things, right? Or a person that's found and they're stuck in this spot where it's like, okay, on paper, everybody else sees me as successful, but I don't feel great. So I don't want to go and put myself out there and try something new because everybody's going to think I'm crazy, right? Doesn't matter. Go try something else. Shift back to open. And then when it comes, once you've figured out where you're at, the next stage is the separation between us and the things we want really is the internal person. What I mean by that is if you were the person that has the things that you want, you'd already have the things you want. Like if you're the person that has like a multi-million dollar business, like inside, you'd already have that outside because the way that you operate from a mindset point, a habit point, actions point, you do those things. It just be who you are. The biggest separation between those who are successful and those who aren't is not the information. It's not the tools and strategies. It genuinely is, are you the person that has that natural effortless flow in your daily operations of how you are a person, how you tick, that just executes at a level to accomplish that thing? And so what I call are anchors that dial that in for a person. Do you have an anchor in productivity? Do you have an anchor in grit? Do you have an anchor in tenacity? When I mean anchor, like, is that who you identify as? Like we talked about earlier, the identity. Does your ego protect that with its actions? Are you the person who's tenacious, who stays up super late? Are you the person that does the work? Are you the person that goes out of your comfort zone? Is that who you are? So that people like, that guy, that girl, they're crazy. What kind of maniac does that, right? When people look at you and they see that in you and that's who you are, that's how you naturally succeed and grow. And people who want success and don't have it, it simply is they don't have the identity anchors in place currently, and that's not just who they are yet. And what I work on is shifting you in that space where that's who you are. When it's who you are inside, you can naturally create that world outside.
Wow. Absolutely, yeah. I think that's hard for people to realize. Like, you have to find out what you're naturally good at and then just go from there. But I like what you said about like constantly having to shift, because a lot of people think that life just takes like a path of a straight line. But In reality, it goes up, down, through valleys, over like cliffs, all that kind of crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know like a lot of people, especially myself, like before we started doing this podcast, like you would always like ask, like, why are these millionaires and billionaires like still trying to do the next thing and still trying to level up in their business? And then like, it's so obvious now, like the way you explained it, it makes sense. Just because like you get bored being stagnant and it's like you're not living your real identity out. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was cool as well.
Or you actually get exposed to things that you never knew were part of the world. So like whenever, think about your climbing up steps, like these big, massive, you know, human person sized steps. Well, the only thing you can really see maybe is the next step, right? That's all you can see. And so you're fighting for that next step. You have no idea what's on the step past that. So you finally climb to the next step. You get there, you're like, oh my gosh, there's that in the world? And so what they're seeking and going after, sometimes me and you have no clue what that looks like because we're not at the step where they're at to see what's out there, to see the opportunity, to see the way the world works. And for me, like in the climb of my professional career now, dude, I've been exposed to stuff. I'm like, holy, I didn't even know that existed. What, like, and I wouldn't have known that until I got to this step here and got brought into this room or I got to be part of this meeting, right? So when we sit back and say, what are they even working for anymore? They got way too much money. It's one thing they accomplish, but there's so many more things of fulfillment within life that make a human feel like fulfilled. When you've ticked the box, it's like when you've all of a sudden have eaten the food and like you were hungry and you ate a bunch of food, you don't never think about food. You think about, okay, now that I'm satiated, what else can I do today? Well, for them, that was just one box. They filled their stomach with that one thing. There's still more that they can go do in the world. That's what they're going after.
Right. And I think that the biggest thing is like people think that I just want to be successful to get really rich and then retire and live like the 40 years for the rest of my life just doing nothing. And it's the same for like working. Like, oh, I'll work a 9-to-5 and get like a steady like $70,000 a year income while I could be doing something I like and taking less money. But people don't really feel like taking that jump just because it's less income involved. So I think that's a huge part of it.
Yeah, I think people tie too many things to the world's view of what's great and what's good. There's a skill that the world has that doesn't that doesn't work. It kind of sucks. The scale of the world has us always moving, always adjusting. And based on what group of people you're around, the world scale is different. So when we compare ourselves to the world scale, we will always feel inadequate, always feel like there's something missing, always feel less than. And so what I work with people is, as I work with them, I sit down and say, let's develop your scale. For you, this day and like right now, what would be phenomenal? What would be great for you to accomplish, for you to do in the next 6 months, 12 months, whatever it is, what would be great for you? And we plan that out meticulously so we know exactly what they can feel great about accomplishing. Even if when they accomplish it, somebody else would say, that's a small accomplishment. Because if the world says that, I feel like, oh man, I thought it was great, it's not. And if I develop this desire for the world scale, I miss out on that. Whereas if I set my own scale and this is what's great, even if Tom or Susan come in and say, oh yeah, but that's weak compared to this, I could say, okay, cool. Let me take a look. Yeah, I'm glad that your scale says that, but mine says this, so I feel great. I'm gonna go to bed happy tonight. So it's about setting your own scale and not worrying about the rest of the world scale.
100%. And then I know a lot of people say something really similar is like, you can't compare like your chapter one to someone else's chapter 20. And yeah. I think that just like stresses that idea even more. So it's great.
Yeah. People still do it though, sadly. It sucks.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's terrible. But people will learn hopefully from this podcast and other things that are out there these days.
Hope so.
So we just wanted to go more into like the actual like daily actions of, you know, what you took to become successful. So one of the highlights that you've done was building a six-figure gym business. Mm-hmm. So if you could just take us through like some of the steps that went into doing that and maintaining that business and kind of.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did it the absolute wrong way. So I came out of the NFL. I was like, well, I have my degree and I have some money. So I'm going to go and open a gym and everyone's going to want to work with me and I'm going to make so much money. Ha 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 ha. Right. And then you get into it. You're like, holy crap. I just have a skill set that allows me to have played the game of football. And a skill set that allows me to understand how to explain exercise to somebody. Business is a whole different monster. Whether you're doing a business trying to sell oranges on the side of the street or a business in the gym, right? It's very difficult. And so I opened a gym with no business sense, no business plan, and zero clients. And I opened up 8,000 square feet of space, and I had a 3-year lease. The stupidest thing you should ever do. And I just set myself up for failure. Within 9 months, I was not able to pay rent for 3 months. Some guy rolls up on a Harley with an envelope, hands it to me. The landlord was serving me with eviction papers. I had 2 weeks to pay $16,000. I had about $4,000 in the bank, and we were making maybe $7,000 a month before paying people. I was broke. So I got to this point where I was like, well, I got to figure this damn thing out. And one of the biggest things I did is I got a coach. The last amount of money I had, that $4,000, I gave over to a coach. In fact, I signed on for $6,000, only could pay $4,000 to begin with, right? So I was like, I need you to tell me what's going on. And we just broke it all down. And what the thing was is I had zero systems in place that made it a business. It was Anthony with a job trying to pay for everything. Because there's a difference between a business and a job. A job is you come in, you do this job, you got to pretty much figure things out every single day. That's how most jobs are. You just, okay, here's a thing, figure it out as it comes along. A business says you create a system. The business tells you what needs to get done that day. You do that thing. The business runs. Like, you're not going to walk into Amazon and say, how do I get these packages onto the truck on time in the right organized manner? No, it's a business. Get this, click this, follow the process. That's how the business runs. You do, you're a cog in the wheel, right? And so for me, when I got this person on, I navigated how to deal with everything from like trying to deal with the different personalities of people I worked with, how to create actual systems that let the business run so I could take anybody off the street, plug them in, teach them how to do something and the business would run. Had to navigate how to deal with ups and downs of the market space. This is 2008, horrible economy. Had to deal with happy clients, unhappy clients, too good of growth, too bad of falling downhill. How to be able to move. I had to, at one point, move my entire gym. Like, all these weird things that the business teaches you. It's what's called a microcosm of the world. Like, it's a small example of the entire bigger world. There are people lying to me, stealing from me, all this craziness. And so for me, in the gym business, the biggest thing that I learned was the most important thing that you have, the absolute most important thing, is going to be your team. Your team and the people that they work with, which is your clients. Most people think it's the clients. I don't believe the clients are the most important thing. I believe my team is the most important thing. And because I put the clients at such high esteem, and I realize that if my team is phenomenally happy, they're doing a great job, it's going to affect my clients amazingly. So I serve my clients by serving my team first. And that means loving them, caring for them, teaching them what I got to teach them, even if it's painstakingly, frustratingly annoying and simple. It's being patient and telling them the same thing 17 times or 15 different ways. And so for me, like business, in a sense, it's learning how to navigate the pitfalls of the ups and downs of the world outside of you, deal with your team, and then take care of clients amazingly.
Yep. I mean, for me, I go to a gym back home. It's like a high intensity interval training type situation. And I was like very hesitant to go in at first. But then once I took my first class, like the thing that really stuck out to me was like the three trainers that trained me during the workout were just like, they weren't even like trainers. They were like friends. Like, they were just pushing me along, super nice people. And they were what drew me back every time and like allowed me to sign up for a full year. So I definitely think that's a huge part of a gym space for sure.
They did it right.
Yeah, exactly. So I also just wanted to ask you, like people our age that are starting like side hustles, podcasts, whatever it may be, like at some point you're going to have to delegate tasks, you're going to have to outsource, you're going to have to find someone on board. So what are just some tips that you kind of learned from doing that yourself on finding and building a team for your business?
Oh yeah, man. So what you first do is you have to create a system that will teach them how to do something from a sheet of paper. So you cannot be the person that comes in and tells them what to do every day, because if so, then you're going to be doing their job. It's just annoying. So when it comes to what you guys are doing now, every business has pretty much six different phases, six, maybe seven. The first phase is awareness. What is it you do to create awareness for your business? This is pretty much what you'd call your marketing, right? So the marketing is saying, hey, we exist. Then you have the next stage, which is how do you get a lead? Like how do you get people to give you their contact information so you can continue a conversation? So it's going to be a lead gen process. How do I ask, right? The next stage is going to be, how do I follow up with these people and establish that relationship? Do I use email? Do I get phone calls? Do they watch videos? What do they do that allows me to establish a relationship with them? This happens literally for any business under the sun. Then from there, it's going to be, what do I do to get this person to become a client? It's called a conversion conversation. Do I do, for our world, do I do an in-person meeting? Do I do a video meeting? Do I do a sales video? Do I do a sales page? Like, what do I do, a masterclass? What do I do that has them get into a conversation where I can ask for the sale once I've warmed them up, we'll call it. The next stage is, how do I deliver on what I promised? Because obviously there's a promise you're giving them in that conversation to convert them to a client. How does that experience work for them? That's why I said experience. Like, you have had a great experience, right? At the gym, so to speak. And there's a process leading up. You might have saw their banner outside, or maybe you got an email or something. Then you gave them your contact information so you could have a conversation about the gym, or you just walked in person. They walked and gave you a tour. They sent you some emails. They followed up with you, established relationship. They sat you down in a room and said, hey, here's what we offer. What do you want to do? It's a conversion conversation. Cool. You signed up. You paid them money. Then they delivered on their product by having you love the gym, having you love being around. That's the delivery. The next step is either one or two. One, you can ascend, which is give them something they need more to help with what they already have. So for example, if I'm in the gym industry, I've sold you a gym membership or training. The ascension is, do you want some supplements? Do you want some workout clothes? Do you want to buy a hoodie? Like, there's this next level of ascension. Past that, it's like, oh, great. I love this place. The last step is recycle, because it's circle, right? Awareness is where it starts. You recycle the happy clients. Hey, I love this place. Like, you're I had this amazing experience. Go check them out. That becomes a new piece of awareness, starts to cycle over for somebody else. So when it comes to you developing the business of what you guys have, create systems that allow that to take place. You can tweak and fine tune. And when you get it running right, then you can hire someone to do that job exactly how you need it to be done for this business system. Don't just hire someone and say, hey, I need you to get people on to the podcast so that they can talk to us. That's never going to work, because they're not going to know who to call, how to call them, what kind of clients you want, how to prepare them for the meeting. It'll be a headache for you. But if you say, hey, here's a sheet of paper. These are the exact type of clients that we want to have, or people want to have on the podcast. Here's the email you're going to send them to invite them. If they say yes, here's an email you send them to get them to schedule a call. Here's what they need to have prior to our actual meeting. Here's a reminder you give them right before they get on with us. After the fact, here's the email you give them to say thank you. That's a whole system. And when you can have somebody else do that, then you have a business.
Yep. And I know you're exactly right, because what you were saying about like the Ascension product, like once I signed up, I started buying merch, and then eventually I like told my friends about it. They joined. So like exactly what you said.
You just become an evangelist for the business.
Yep.
Wow. All right. Yeah. I mean, that's huge information. You have any other questions?
I just want to go into American Ninja Warrior quick before we wrap it up.
American Ninja Warrior.
So, like, what is the time frame on that? Like, are you still doing it now? Did you just previously do it? Stuff like
that. Yeah, so I just got done filming my third season, which is season 11, and it airs, I believe, the season starts airing in June.
Wow.
Awesome. Yeah.
What would you say has been a better experience, that or the NFL?
It's a tough question, man. The football was a way better experience from a standpoint of what I needed to know about life. The Ninja Warrior has been great to be able to, I guess, master something you're not supposed to be good at. Because I'm like right now, I'm about 235 pounds. And most of the guys in that show are about 135 pounds. So I'm a little bit different of a human. I mean, most were like 160, but I'm not designed for that. And so for me, it's an exercise of like the mental and physical capabilities of my initial identity, right? To stretch past that to say, okay, I'm not the guy on paper you'd look at, but can I still do this? And so I've had a blast figuring it all out, trying new things and being able to experience a whole new world that I never knew existed.
Yeah. So how does it go? Like, how do you go about training for that? Cause like when I watched it on TV, the grip strength, all the kind of things that they do are just like superhuman. So what's your training regimen like?
Well, for me, when I was in college, I had a strength coach that was real big on never use gloves, only use chalk and bare hands. So I developed this weird grip strength in college, which I've always just kind of had. Then from there, training wise, what you end up doing is there's facilities that are all around the country that are ninja gyms. So there's one nearby me. It's one of the best in the country I go to and just train. So you literally just go on these weird apparatus and just do your thing. And then you show up to the show and they don't let you practice in the show. They literally show it to you one time, put you in a back room and say, okay, when it's your turn, you get to go take one shot at it. That's it.
That's sick.
Yeah, that's insane.
It's a little crazy.
All right. So we're going to wrap up with a lightning round quick. Just a few quick questions.
Do it.
Answers too. So, but first, we want to ask if you have any questions for us before we get into that.
No, man. I don't have any questions. I enjoy talking to you guys, man. It's cool. I mean, nothing specific I can think of.
Appreciate it.
All right, sweet.
Yeah, so the first question is, what was the worst advice you've ever received? And then what was the best advice you've ever received?
Worst advice I ever received when I was in college, I told you I was my prayer with my son, my wife was, one of my college teammates told me that I should have her get an abortion. Worst advice I ever had in my life. This day I'm still bothered by him for even saying that because I love my son to death. I can't imagine life without him. I've always loved being a father. Best advice I ever received, it came to when I was dealing with people who we'll call haters, right? And the concept is this, it's like, imagine, you ever seen American Gladiator back in the day, that show where they had like to climb this wall? So American Gladiator's guy takes off, climbs the wall, then the gladiator comes out after him and tries to climb this wall, pull him off the wall. And what I realized, I was climbing in my business, I was climbing in life, we'll all climb in a certain level. And then what ends up happening is the gladiator, somebody below you, starts to try to come after you. And if you watch the show, the worst thing someone can do while trying to get to the top fast is to be climbing, all of a sudden stop and look down. Because the moment that you look down, your focus stops going up and that looks at them and it gives them time to catch up, to grab your ankle and pull you down. So what I always had, that was great advice for me back in the day when I had the gym, one of my buddies, Todd Dirk, was like, you need to just focus on going ahead, even if you hear him nipping at your heels. Because the moment that you stop focusing on where you're going and moving is the moment they actually catch up. And the ones who are behind you are behind you for a reason. So when they start chattering, start talking, just smile and keep moving. Because when you hit that buzzer, it doesn't matter anything that happened in between, you will have hit the buzzer.
100%. And I was actually just on a podcast recently. And we talked about the crab theory, which is like super similar to that. Like you put a bunch of crabs in a bucket and then like one tries to escape and the other crabs will like all try to pull them back down.
And they start taking the crabs out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that's cool.
Yeah, buddy.
All right. So what would you say like right now for a college student, what is the best side hustle to get into to try to make some money?
I would get into developing a list and doing affiliate marketing. So you don't have to be anybody special to develop an email list because the money's in the email list or like a collection of an audience and people think it's followership. If I get a bunch of followers, I can make a bunch of money. It's not it. If you can get good at copywriting and writing emails and developing an email list of people who like what you share, it could be as little as saying, I'm going to give you like I don't know. If you give me your email, I'm going to send you a free, you know, 5-step process on how to clean your car rims perfectly. Something random, right? Anybody that wants that, develop a list of people that are wrapped around that thing. And then over time, an affiliate says, like, if I was like, hey guys, I'm launching this product, this book or a coaching program. And it's a $2,000 program. For anybody you send me, I'm going to give you $750 or $1,000 if they buy. And there are people legitimately are in the background of the world right now who have lists that are massive lists. That's all they do. whenever something new comes out, they write a cool email, send it to their audience of somebody else's product, and people buy it and they get a cut for just doing nothing but connecting the two. So what you're doing is perfect, developing this podcast to get people in. Focus on getting emails. Find a way to get people's emails, learn how to write good emails, and then just continuously develop a relationship with people by sharing cool stuff with them.
You can't see it right now, but there's like a board that we write on over here. And
yeah,
two of our goals before the semester ends is develop an email list. So
do it now. I mean, it's not hard. Just create. You could do multiple different things that get people to give you their email. So one thing is get the email. Second thing is continuously emailing them, developing a relationship.
Yeah, we actually like did this ebook. It's just like how to start a podcast, it's like 50-page ebook. And then like all you got to do is put in your email and send it to you. So that's what we're doing.
Okay. Only problem I have with that is 50 pages is way too much. You're going to find that when people want to do like the opt-in, they need to be able to consume it in 4 to 7 minutes. If it takes more than four to seven minutes, they're not going to listen to it. Like I got a lot of stuff that I'll get that's that long. And I'm like, this is just a whole course. I'm not going to consume 50 pages. Unless you're some big, big person like you're Tony Robbins and they know your stuff's gold. If they don't just yet, you got 4 to 7 minutes to convince them that you know something amazing about one thing.
Awesome. Sounds good. Good to know.
Yeah, that's huge.
Okay, so next question. There's two more. So the next one is, what does the name Anthony Trucks mean to the world 10 years from now?
10 years from now, Anthony Trucks is he's a phenomenal human that lives life in a way to where if anybody said anything bad about him, nobody would believe it. I've been a very transparent person my entire life. I've never really been off the grid from high school to college to the pros to what I do now. I've never been off the grid. Never done anything crazy. I have zero skeletons. And so for me, I've always realized the world right now is not the happiest, most joyous place. And a lot of people do a lot of dirty things to other people. And I really believe that what you do in the dark comes to the light. And so I do nothing in the dark that's bad. And so 10 years from now, if you know, everyone's looking at me, I want them to be like, holy crap, that guy really is that good. A person like that does exist. And that's how I live my life. I'm transparent. I'm honest. I'll go out of my way to do right by somebody, even if it really sucks for me. I've done it many times and I'll continue to keep doing that.
I love that advice actually. Yeah. All right. So last question here before we wrap up. It's a pretty deep one. A lot of people will have trouble with it, but it's a huge one. So what would you put on a billboard for the whole world to see? Like what message would you want to display?
My message would be own your shift. Because the world I work in is it's shift, right? It's all about shift. There's three stages of this. The first one is most people won't own their shift. Like they won't own that they have to change something. People will say they want something different all day long, but the moment they're met with this this very clear step they have to take, their ego doesn't let them take it. And they just sit there stagnant for years and years and years, never making improvements because they put this wall up. And when you put the wall up, it doesn't allow you to work. You won't give yourself permission to work on that thing. And so the first stage is you got to own that you need some work to be done. It's not a bad thing. It's actually a thing that gives you more respect from other human beings. Second thing is own your shift, which means own the stuff that you have to work on. The first step is realizing I got to work on stuff. Second thing is working on it. Like realizing these are the things I really got to work on. Like maybe I'm not the best dad. Maybe not the best student. Maybe not the best brother. Like not the best friend. That's the stuff I got to really like look at. And if I don't look at it, I'll never fix it. And so as opposed to ignoring it, you actually have to focus on it. And the last thing is owning your shift. The shift portion of it is like owning the work that's going to be done. Like that's the work and really doing the work. And the work is not always like going out and lifting weights. It's not physical work sometimes. Sometimes work doesn't show up until it's in the middle of a very difficult and uncomfortable moment where you have to be honest with somebody or you have to secede from somebody or you have to swallow your ego and your pride. Those are the moments when the work is the hardest because it's the most emotionally difficult thing to do. It's heavy emotional lifting. And it's in those moments that true growth happens, which establishes phenomenal relationships, does great things for your business and your life. But it's only in those moments that any of it matters. It doesn't matter what we talk about here and now. It's only going to matter in that very specific finite moment. And that is the real work that has to be done.
Wow. This is great to end on.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to say, like, we really, really appreciate you taking the time. And I know a lot of people listening to this are going to be really inspired by what you talked about. And they definitely learned a lot. So if they want to continue following you, maybe sign up for your courses or work with you in the future, where can they find you and how can they sign up?
So I'm on MySpace at no, I'm just kidding. I'm on Instagram, man. Instagram at Anthony Trucks is the best place to find me.
Awesome, man. We really appreciate it.
Yep.
Very welcome. Very welcome.
Guys. To keep in touch and we'll let you know when everything's set up to drop and we'll send you all the links and all the good stuff like that. So
awesome.
Hey guys, show some love for the Real Talk University podcast by subscribing and leaving a review on the Apple Podcast app. See you all next week.